Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited
by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello and welcome to Talking Point, Planet F1's very own podcast. In today's episode, we're going to be discussing the French Grand Prix, and I can't believe I'm saying this, but it was a good French Grand Prix, a French Grand Prix that gave us lots and lots to discuss. It really must be a top season. I'm your host, Vinny Kubota, and joining me is Henry Valentine. Henry, how's it going?
It's going well, thank you. I mean, I really didn't expect us to have as much to talk about as we actually do. So that makes our lives easier. And it was a great race yesterday.
I know. I was expecting this to be one of the duds of the season in terms of a race and a podcast. But
there's no such thing as a dud of Talking Point. Come on now.
Yeah, no, I mean, it makes our lives a lot easier. The fact that, Mercedes and Red Bull kindly delivered a real spectacular show at the front. So, that's the only place to start, really. Before we get into the race, obviously Mercedes headed here as favourites after winning 2018 and 2019 pretty comfortably, courtesy of Hamilton. I mean, when Verstappen took pole position, that felt like a pretty significant moment for Red Bull, didn't it?
It did. And in FP3, we went something like 7/10 faster than anyone else. And that in itself just felt like a moment where you just take a step back and think, oh, okay, it's on, isn't it? Verstappen just looked so comfortable in that car all weekend. I watched his pole lap as well. And there was no correction. There was no lockup. It was just inch perfect the whole way round. And he just looked up for it from the off, didn't he?
Yeah, in qualifying, he made it look pretty easy. I mean, he didn't look flustered. He didn't sound stressed or anything. He was like, oh, yeah, cool, pole position, you know. And, afterwards, Horner said that if Red Bull could beat Mercedes there, they could beat them anywhere. And, it looks like they can beat them anywhere then, because that's just what Verstappen did, although it wasn't easy. Obviously made a mistake at turn one. Hamilton got ahead, and at first Hamilton was looking fairly comfortable in the lead. You started to wonder, I was just gonna, you know, after all, is it just gonna be another Mercedes win? But then Verstappen got him on the undercut, but then despite taking the lead, they decided to pit him again. And I mean, when they called him in for a second stop, obviously it was Barcelona, but the other way around. What were your thoughts? Did you think it was a bit of a good call, a bit of a risk?
It was, yeah. And I do wonder if that was in part due to Lewis Hamilton coming on the radio just to make sure that say, right, let's undercut them this time, because at the first round of pit stops, Verstappen managed to sort of claw back a 3-second gap and then undercut him and take the lead, which in itself was a big surprise, because I don't think the teams were anticipating the undercut to be as strong as it was. So Verstappen took the lead again on his own merit, and Hamilton was sort of urging the team to try something different, and Bottas as well, actually, but we'll come to that separately in a bit. And yeah, when Verstappen came in, it just kind of threw the cat among the pigeons, really. It's almost like Mercedes didn't really know what to do with themselves. By the time that they'd sort of come to a conclusion, I think it was too late to pit him, because otherwise Verstappen would have been even further ahead. So it's not often Mercedes get caught out in strategy, but they really did.
Yeah, and like you said, their drivers both wanted to come in again. So it does seem a bit of a strange decision. But I mean, on the other hand, Verstappen did still have a lot to do, though, didn't he? I mean, he had to ensure that he still had strong enough pace to catch the front two. He had to make sure that he had enough tyres to last until the end. He had to, well, overtake them, which is not that easy at Paul Ricard either. You know, I think the strategy was definitely the main reason that he won. But, I mean, he executed it to perfection as well, didn't he?
He did. It means exactly the sort of mirror situation as Lewis Hamilton did to him in Spain, wasn't it? You know, taking the extra stop, reading him in at about a second a lap, and having, you know, having enough within him to be able to overtake him at the end. But I think the added dimension to that was like just how much the tyres were degrading in France as well, because a lot of teams sort of anticipated just being a pretty standard one stop race, but the track temperature was a lot cooler than it was on Friday and Saturday, which could have had an impact. Tire pressures were higher because of everything that happened in Baku, and then there was rain in the morning as well before the race, and that would have probably presumably cleaned up the track surface a bit, so some of the rubber that went down might not have stuck around. So that combination of factors probably led to tyre degradation being higher. And then, Verstappen took full advantage by doing something different.
I think what's great with this title, obviously we've had title fights in 2017 and 2018, but I feel like in those cases, we didn't kind of every weekend get Hamilton at his best and Vettel at his best. It kind of went back and forth. You know, there'd be mistakes, particularly from Vettel in the kind of later parts of the season. Whereas at the moment with this title fight, we're getting Verstappen and Hamilton, apart from Hamilton's mistake in Baku where he accidentally hit that switch. But I mean, on the whole, we're getting both of them driving so well. I mean, you know, Verstappen couldn't really have done much better yesterday. And I mean, Hamilton, he did a crazy good job to kind of make his tyres last and still have pretty decent pace, really. I mean, Verstappen wasn't closing that gap down as quickly as he would have hoped at the end. I mean, it's just so great to see two top drivers, you know, at their best going head to head.
Yeah, exactly. And you can tell they're loving it as well. Like that's the great thing about it, that they're both really enjoying the fight. And you get the feeling that this is just going to swing back and forth throughout the rest of the season. I mean, we're seven races into what's meant to be a 23-race season as well. I don't know how much we'll be able to take by the time we get to race 15 or 16 and they're still neck and neck. It'll be fantastic. And I'm really, really enjoying the season so far. And, if races in Spain and France are good, then you know we're doing all right for ourselves this season.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's got I don't want to jinx it and get carried away, but it's got the potential to be the best title fight in a long time, you know, since maybe like 2012. We've got an interesting battle, which the only other time we had was obviously 17 and 18. And they they fizzled out in the end, really, because Hamilton got away from Vettel. Whereas here, I think what makes it interesting in terms of the drivers' title championship fight is that Verstappen is the one leading, so you've got Hamilton having to do the chasing, which, you know, if Verstappen was having to do the chasing, I'd think, you know, the less experienced one, the one who hasn't been in a title fight trying to claw that back, I'd think it'd be a bit difficult. But with it being the other way around, I think the dynamic is really interesting. And yeah, I just can't wait to see how it goes. And we've got a proper battle for the title in the Constructors' Championship as well, which we haven't had since, 2010?
Probably,
it's been that long.
Yeah.
Which is crazy, a good 11 years. And that is, at the moment, Red Bull are leading that, thanks in large part to Sergio Perez, who got his second podium of the season. It is interesting. On days like that, I mean, I think Perez and Bottas both drove pretty well in general, and it does really make a difference at the front, doesn't it, when they're both there?
Yeah, it does. I was quite surprised by, well, actually not surprised. I was quite happy to see Bottas actually closer to the pace over the weekend. He looked quick in qualifying, and after the first round of pit stops, he was right on Hamilton and Verstappen's tail, but he just seemed to fade away a little bit, which was a bit of a shame. But I think props have to go to Perez, though, because, again, he managed to make his tyres last, only did a one-stopper, and showed that he had much more tyre life at the end to get past Bottas, which, you know, in the context of Constructor Championship, could be really big towards the end of the season. And that is exactly what Red Bull want from him. You know, he's looking up to speed now. He's doing a great job. And yeah, you kind of feel sorry for Bottas after all that, because again, he didn't really have much luck. But you know, it's good to see them both performing. I mean, I think they're about a minute ahead of Lando Norris in P5 as well. So it just showed that both teams were pushing each other as hard as they could on Sunday.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, in terms of Perez, I think his, you know, the skill he's renowned for, tyre preservation, I think that really does add a really interesting dynamic to the battle at the front, because, you know, in terms of outright pace, he probably isn't a match for Hamilton or Verstappen, or even Bottas yesterday, to be fair. But he makes up for that with the fact that his tyres lasted a lot longer. And that ultimately, you know, brought him back well into the mix. I think it's, it makes things really interesting. In terms of Bottas, I mean, yeah, you have to feel sorry for him. He suggested plan B he literally said on the radio, "I'm thinking plan B," and Mercedes was like, "Yep, good for you." And he just completely ignored him, you know. Then yeah, for the rest of the race, he's just there like, "Yeah, my tyres are dumb. We're not going to get a podium." And it's like their response was just like it's like that Jeremy Clarkson meme, you know, where he's like, "Oh, no, anyway."
Yeah.
Literally, they did not care. I think they only really wanted him to be a roadblock for Verstappen, didn't they?
Yeah. But at the same time, Bottas is still keen to win races himself. Obviously, he's a racing driver. He's going to want to finish as high as he can. And I do feel sorry for him, because I think he was on the radio pretty much earlier than anyone else saying, right, this is pretty much going to be a two-stop race, make it happen. And then as soon as he got passed by Perez, you know, it was a rare show of public anger as well, by sort of effing and blinding on the radio saying, like, why did no one listen to me? And and you have to side with him on that, really.
Yeah, you do. I mean, if they listen to him, then I do wonder. I mean, I don't know. I'm not sure if you get this, but I really don't. Why didn't they just split strategies? What did they have to lose by putting one of them? Was it literally they didn't want for Verstappen to have a clearer route to win? They literally sacrificed Bottas' strategy just to try and block Verstappen, which, I mean, it's crazy in itself, because when a driver's got fresher tyres and DRS, there's nothing that you're going to be able to do, really. So, yeah, I really don't understand why they didn't go, you know, split their strategies, put Bottas on a two-stop and Hamilton on a one-stop.
Yeah, and with both drivers at the front as well, that gives you that flexibility to be able to do that. But Mercedes just didn't, you know, they just didn't really take the initiative on that. And as I've said before, it's very rare that Mercedes get outdone on strategy, but I think they really shot themselves in the foot in France, you know. It was, and Red Bull took full advantage, and you've got to give them credit for that. And, you know, I'm not on the side of Nico Rosberg here either, calling Valtteri Bottas' defence rubbish against Verstappen, because like, Bottas was on the radio saying how done his tyres were, and yes, he did run deep at the chicane and made life a lot easier for Verstappen than he could have done, but I reckon, you know, he probably would have only got one more lap before he was overtaken anyway.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, yeah, the same thing happened with Hamilton. I mean, you know, Bottas did keep Verstappen behind on the straight, which Hamilton didn't do. It's just in sacrifice, he then went off at the too deep into the corner. But yeah, I don't think there was anything he could have done, really. But I mean, looking at the title fight, when you look at Barcelona, you look at here, I mean, they're two pretty evenly matched teams, aren't they, really, in terms of, you know, in terms of strategists, in terms of drivers, in terms of the car generally. I mean, It's a pretty even fight.
Which is great. I mean, like, Hamilton came out after the race and said that the Red Bull were just getting a bit too quick. But I do wonder if that's just sort of the mind games that he's trying to play, really. He's He's managing to drag the very most out of himself and that car. And, you know, I think this, again, this really bodes well, because I don't know how many more upgrades both teams are going to be bringing, but as Toto Wolff said over the weekend, he's like, they're still trying to find that balance with how much to give to the 2021 car without sacrificing their competitiveness in 2022 and beyond. And that's going to be one of the really big dimensions of this fight, I think, as we head further into the season, especially after the summer break.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, development's going to be huge. Development of the engine as well, because here, arguably for the first time, we had the Red Bull have fairly comfortably better straight line speed than the Mercedes. Which is a bit of a surprise, really. You know, you didn't really expect Honda to get the jump on them in that department. So that could be huge. You know, that's always been Mercedes' strength. But if Red Bull have that now, then you kind of wonder, where can Mercedes actually be dominant again?
Yeah, true. I mean, both Red Bulls took new power units this weekend, but Honda have shown massive improvements from the so-called GP2 engine from a few years ago. And yeah, that adds another dimension. And Christian Horner admitted sort of being surprised at Mercedes sort of changing chassis, changing tack so early in the season, which, you know, with durability normally being their big strength. And I don't know if it's Mercedes sort of falling back or everyone else catching up, but it does feel like a much more level playing field now.
Yeah, it definitely does. Yeah. Well, we'll get into, you know, what happens next, you know, what's going to happen in Austria in a second. But, well, before we do so, let's just run through other teams on the grid. I think looking down the finishing order, maybe the team that enjoyed the best day, except Red Bull, perhaps, was McLaren, with Norris and Ricciardo finishing P5, P6. And really, it was the first time this season that they had both drivers performing as well as they could. And I mean, it's a pretty formidable duo when they're both, they're both on top of their game.
Absolutely. Well, yeah, I'm really pleased to see Daniel Ricciardo more in the fight as well. In that first stint in particular, he looked really racy, and that's probably the most up for it in terms of the race he's looked at McLaren. And I think full props have to go to Norris as well, because he was left out quite a bit longer, and he somehow managed to eke his tyres out, and that ultimately probably gave him the chance to be able to jump Ricciardo in the end, which he managed to do. And I think that's a big weekend for McLaren as well, especially where Ferrari has so much trouble in the race. Getting 18 points and jumping back ahead of them in the constructors will be huge for them,
especially considering on Saturday at least they didn't look like they had very strong pace. You know, Norris qualified P8, Ricciardo P10, and that was kind of, but you know, the Alpine drivers didn't exactly nail their laps as well. You kind of thought that in terms of the pecking order, McLaren were, you know, nowhere near kind of best of the rest. So yeah, to deliver like that is huge. And I mean, they've got a pretty comfortable lead to Ferrari in the constructors now. We'll take a look at that in a sec. But yeah, looking at Ferrari, there was one point where Leclerc had pitted early and pulled off the undercut on a few drivers, including Ricciardo, and I thought, my God, has Ferrari got their strategy right for once? Yeah, that went well, didn't it?
Well, yeah, he jumped three drivers at once, which, you know, he pitted, I think, three laps earlier than Ricciardo, and he managed to get all of them, but he just couldn't make those tyres last. And, yeah, we did have sort of green shoots of thinking, oh, yeah, Ferrari have done well on this, and then turns out not, which, I mean, it's a real shame, because like qualifying P5 and P7, they look quick. Carlos Sainz in particular, really quick all weekend, but just did the race, they just got swallowed up, didn't they?
Yeah, it was a weird one, because again, in terms of pace, I think they were fine. I mean, Sainz stayed in P5 in the opening stages, I think, for most of the first stint, really. In terms of speed, I don't think there was issues. It was just that tyres, that car rather seemed to just completely destroy its tyres, which led to them obviously both tumbling out of the points pretty spectacularly. I mean, yeah, it's a bit of a concerning weakness to have, I think, in a season where the Pirelli tyres have been playing such a big part.
It is, yeah. Pirelli themselves, I mean, we've covered them loads, but it's a little bit troubling for Ferrari that, you know, a change in pressure has seen them pretty much eat their tires up so much faster, and coming away completely pointless is that's a worrying sign. And and Leclerc said after the race that he's worried that that's going to continue in Austria as well, so they're gonna have to get their heads around it pretty quickly if they're gonna get back on it, I think.
Yeah, it reminds me a bit of Haas a few years ago. I can't remember which year it was, 2019 maybe, where the car wasn't actually that terrible, but they just could not figure out how to get the tyres working on them. This is only one race for Ferrari. It could just be a one-off. In terms of other drivers in the top 10, standout was Pierre Gasly, which I feel like I say that in every single episode, to be honest. I mean, what a season he's having. I think except from Norris, he's, outside the top teams, Gasly's probably been the most impressive, hasn't he?
He has, yeah. I can't disagree with that. He's done so well this season, and he, again, just looked to completely have the run over Yuki Tsunoda again. Don't get me wrong, Tsunoda crashed out in Q1 again, but Gasly just looks like he has stepped up so much, and full credit to him. He said in an interview with Sky Sports before the race that he still hopes to get that Red Bull drive back one day. I mean, don't get me wrong, Perez is doing a great job, but if for whatever reason his standards slip, then I'd say Gasly's probably first in the queue now.
Yeah. I mean, I think if it was on driving alone, he probably would have got that seat last season, but there's personal things there. Apparently people that don't, Red Bull don't like him much, God knows why,
according to the
rest of it anyway. Yeah. I mean, yeah, he's just so consistent. He's like Norris in that sense, in that every race they both seem to just be up there whatever happens, just doing their job, not really making any mistakes. And I mean, he's single-handedly dragging AlphaTauri into the fight for P5 in the standings, really, because I mean, he's not getting any help from his teammates, Tsunoda. So, it really is a top season from him. And, obviously, we were kind of expecting him to end up at Alpine next year, which hasn't happened. Ocon's got a contract renewal. But
3 years.
3 years, yeah. Three. It's a long one. But, I mean, looking at the performances, obviously Gasly got P7. Ocon didn't score points, had Alonso beating him all weekend. I don't know. We won't get too much into this, but
no.
Bit of a rash decision, maybe?
Maybe. I think 3 years is probably a bit too long on Alpine's part. I mean, Ocon himself said he's never had a three-year contract in any form of motorsport before. And don't get me wrong, he started the season like really, really well, but I do hope that he's able to carry that on for his own sake, because if not, then Alpine might wonder if they jumped the gun slightly, especially with a driver like Gasly potentially on the market for them. But I think now that Alonso's up to speed, I think that'll be a factor in how he's viewed towards the end of the season. I mean, don't get me wrong, he had comfortably the beating of Alonso in the first few races, but I can see that sort of swinging back Alonso's way now, and I think it's up to Ocon to just justify why he's been given that security for the next few years.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, because obviously Ocon, he did have the beating for Alonso in the first kind of five rounds of this season, fairly comfortably as well. But I look at it now and I'm starting to think, was that Alonso just not quite being up to speed rather than Ocon being really good? Because in the last two races, Alonso has beaten Ocon. And I mean, this weekend, he was ahead of him all weekend, wasn't he? He out-qualified him. He was ahead in practice generally. And he was a long way ahead in the race. I mean, he finished P8 and Ocon finished well outside the points. I think P13, maybe.
P14 in the end,
P14, yeah. I mean, six positions difference. It's you do start to wonder if that was just Alonso being off the pace at the start. But, I mean, regardless, isn't it great to see him in the form that he's in now? It's a real relief to see that he definitely does still have it.
Oh, absolutely. I think, it obviously takes a bit of time to get up to speed. And I think it was a little bit longer than he would have liked as well. But now he looks back to the Alonso that we kind of knew anyway. And you know, comfortably inside the points. And both drivers said completely different things after the race, because Alonso said on the second stint his tyres, in his words, came alive, and he was able to really keep his pace up. And at the end, he was trying to challenge Gasly and Ricciardo further ahead, but couldn't quite get close enough in the end there. And Ocon just said he was just going backwards. So it was just completely contrasting fortunes on probably what was a very similar strategy for them.
Completely different, really. I mean, yeah, like you said, Alonso had some strong pace at the end. He was pretty confident that he could get Gasly. Obviously, he never did, but even so, it's still 3 points is still a good haul. Made slightly worse by the fact that their rivals in Aston Martin also scored 3 points though. I mean, yeah, Alonso's not the only former world champion starting to impress in the midfield car, is he? Because, I mean, Vettel's, with every week that passes, he's starting to look, well, better and better in that Aston.
Which feels like a bit of a relief, to be honest. He's done really well in the last few races. And I think credit has to go to Lance Stroll as well, you know, because he was on a really good recovery driving back, who obviously before his tyre failure. But in France, started P19 again. I mean, maybe slightly of his own doing, because his first time lap got deleted because he went past track limits. But then again, no one's going to see a red flag come in twice to sort of get to stop him from getting out of Q1. But going from P19... to P10, and both Aston Martins going long into the race as well before they stopped on tyres that pretty much everyone else was complaining about. I think that bodes well for them to be able to have both cars go forward in the field. Like, Stroll was the big mover yesterday, gaining 9 places, and I think that's a really good sign for them.
Yeah, definitely. I think Stroll does deserve a lot more credit for that drive. I mean, starting P19, finishing P10 is... that's a pretty monumental effort, you know, gaining 9 positions in a car that is decent, but not rapid, you know. It's not like a Mercedes or a Red Bull or something. And I don't really remember it being mentioned once. I feel like if that was Lando Norris, people would be going crazy about it, you know, which, yeah, I think Stroll, you know, maybe, you know, obviously in a difficult situation that he has a dad that owns the team and ensures that he has a seat. But I mean, in terms of driving, I think both of them are starting to perform, actually, and that's starting to look like a pretty strong lineup. There was a point this year where I thought this was going to be maybe the weakest lineup in the midfield, but I mean, I don't know, all through it's looking quite strong now, isn't it? You're just waiting for Tsunoda to kind of get to grips with things.
Yeah, exactly. And I think you're right. Stroll definitely does deserve more credit than he's been getting. And it's very easy to get a bad rep for having your dad literally own the team. But you know, he's been justifying his seat this season. I think overall he's done pretty well for himself. And one thing that I do think Aston did that was quite clever is they looked really slow during practice, but that's because they were sort of prioritizing running on the medium tyre and the hard tyre. And I think that really paid dividends for them, because they were able to learn about the harder compounds and, you know, ultimately go deeper into the race. And that's what got them points in the end. So I think they played the whole weekend really well.
Yeah, they did. Yeah. Cause I think in terms of pace, they weren't a top 10 team really. I think, yeah, in terms of pace, they were probably below Ferrari, McLaren, AlphaTauri, Alpine. So yeah, it was a really good effort to get double points. And, yeah, I mean, looking at the wider context then of the standings, before we look in the midfield, I mean, going to the top, you've got Verstappen with a pretty hefty lead over Hamilton. You've got Red Bull with a pretty hefty lead over Mercedes. Next two races, two in a row at Austria, Red Bull's home track, where they've been strong in recent years. I mean, things are looking pretty good, aren't they?
Yeah, things are looking pretty rosy for them. I mean, like 12 points feels like a big gap, but that can be gone in an instant. Yeah, I mean, it could have easily been overhauled in Baku for brake issues for Hamilton, obviously. But I think, yeah, 37 points clear they are in the Constructors' Championship, and that's a big gap. I mean, Bottas is still behind Norris in the Drivers' Championship too. So don't get me wrong, he's had such bad luck, but he needs to to back up his ideas soon, I think. He can't afford to have more weekends like Baku. And well, A, expect to keep his seat, and B, expect to help Mercedes win the Constructors again. I think Red Bull have really got themselves sorted in that area now that they've got Perez alongside Verstappen.
Yeah, it's a weird one with Verstappen, but it kind of feels like this is an audition for other seats for next year now, which is maybe a bit harsh, but I mean, reports all suggest that Russell's going to be going to Mercedes. So it does kind of feel like Bottas is, you know, his job is kind of to show other teams that he's good enough to deserve a shot with them, which is a bit of a weird one. But I mean, yeah, like you said, the priority is still obviously the Constructors' Championship in that regard. And yeah, midfield, McLaren I didn't expect them to be leading Ferrari, but yeah, they made a big jump in France. Going forward there, yeah, they obviously got a podium. Well, to be fair, both teams got a podium at the Red Bull Ring last year. So yeah, that one it's a tough one to call, isn't it? You kind of feel like that if it was a bit like Racing Point against McLaren last year, and that you've got Ferrari do have the faster car in general in terms of outright pace, but McLaren, they tend to always kind of get everything out of their races, I think, don't they?
Yeah, especially in recent years. I think like their progress has been one of the sort of positive stories in Formula One over the last few years, especially after the sort of debacle of like the early Honda days. And it's good to see them competing again. And they know exactly what they're doing in that team. And I think that bodes well for them. And in a circuit in Spielberg that's got really fine margins as well. I mean, there's we've got all these circuits now that are sort of really tight, really technical, and the gaps can end up being quite large between the teams. But I think Spielberg's good in the sense that it's a much more sort of, in quote marks, simple circuit to drive, and it's only quite short. It's quite a short lap. So I think the pole time last year was about like 63 seconds-ish. Yeah. And it worked really well in Sakhir last year as well with the lap that was under a minute. It showed that the cars are able to sort of compete much more closely. And I think that bodes well for two races there. But where those gaps are a lot smaller, I think you know, that can lead to some really good racing.
Yeah, I mean, one pit stop error and you're in trouble really with the track that's short. And yeah, you don't see McLaren make pit stop errors. You don't see them make strategy errors in general. I'm sure they have, but not too often really. So yeah, it's looking good for them. But I mean, yeah, doubleheader in Spielberg, it's exciting. And I mean, not to get anyone's hopes up or to jinx it, but I looked at the weather forecast and it's meant to rain next weekend. So, you know, I mean, we didn't get it in France. Maybe we'll get it this time.
Oh, God. Yeah, hopefully. I mean, don't get me wrong. Well, wet qualifying last year was good, wasn't it? I mean, Hamilton going faster than anyone else. But I think he was over a second faster than anyone else in the wet. So you know, that opens up a lot of different avenues. But I mean, we thought we needed rain in France to actually make it a good race, but it turns out it was all right without it. But you know, if that happens again in Austria, then great. You know, if we get a race like that, I'm happy either way. It doesn't matter what the weather is.
Yeah, I mean, we've got two races in a row there, so we got a chance, we've got a good chance of getting at least one good race, maybe some rain, maybe even two good races, who knows. Well, that's just about everything for today. As I'm sure you're aware at this point, another race next weekend and then another race the weekend after that. So, yeah, we'll be here covering that. I won't be here for the next episode as I'm going to be at the Euros, which is exciting. But Henry will be. Thanks for coming on today.
No problem at all.
And, yeah, as always, thanks to everyone for listening. If you enjoyed the podcast, then be sure to leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. And in the short few days before we get underway again with our race weekend coverage, then yeah, you can keep an eye on the website planetf1.com for all the latest news and features. Our Twitter's planet_F1, and our Facebook is simply planetf1. So yeah, you can find us in all those places, and you'll find us here again next week. So see you soon. Bye.
Social Podcast Network.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.